Hello, listeners. Happy 2022. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Shore, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, now known today as the Stockbridge Muncie community. I'm Keelan McPherson.
And I'm Sina Bazila Hickey. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, we begin with Mark Dunley's interview with Sally Lauletta about her recent run for Rensselaer County Legislature. Then Elizabeth Press takes us to the press conference and protest to oppose the $20,000 pay raise at the Rensselaer County executive of Steve McLaughlin. After that, Corinne Carey gets the scoop on the collaboration between Capital Area Relief and Liberation and Return Brewing that is easing the transition back from incarceration into the community. Finally, Eileen Javier brings us a story on housing and speaks with Yvonne Maldonado. But first, here are the headlines.
Students at Shaker High School are petitioning school administrators to take action against what is they say is frequent racial and homophobic slurs by fellow students. The petition states part that the school is littered with homophobia, sexual assault, misogyny, Islamophobia, racism, anti-Semitism, and far more. It is the school administration's job to make a safe and healthy environment for students, and this is not the case.
Cindy Duran, the deputy minority leader of the Rensselaer County Legislature, is claiming that Republican County Executive Steve McLaughlin had her car towed from the county office building parking lot in retaliation for her recent call for McLaughlin to resign after being indicted from campaign finance theft and challenging his recent $20,000 pay raise.
State of New York has given the Albany County land bill $1.9 million to rehab 9 vacant buildings into move-in ready homes that extend affordable home ownership, particularly to the households of color and first-time buyers. The 9 buildings have 20 housing units.
The state legislature can meet virtually until at least January 15th under an executive order signed by Governor Hochul in response to a surge in confirmed COVID-19 cases. Other mandates approved by the governor that there are set to expire on January 15th include an eviction moratorium, mask mandate, limit on non-essential surgeries at certain hospitals, and remote government meetings.
The Gazette reports that a number of reported coronavirus cases to climb across the state this past weekend. The Albany County reaching its highest number of COVID-19 related hospitalizations since the pandemic began in 2020. The state reported 62,526 cases on Saturday, a total of 275,563 tests were administered, bringing the positive test rate of 22.69%. New York surpasses the 100-day daily COVID-19 deaths for first time in nearly a year.
Associated Press reports that world leaders are questioning President Biden about the increased erosion of democracy in the United States, increasing the pressure on Biden to speak out on the continuing loss of democratic rights. Congress is slowly investigating the January 6th riot at the nation's capital, which sought to keep Trump as president despite losing the election. Polls show more than half of voters across all political affiliations say that the U.S. democracy is at risk of extinction. Just one-fifth of voters under the age of 30 believe that democracy is secured for future generations. Over 80% of the voters believe that both major parties need to compromise. And that's it for the headlines.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Like what you hear? Find these stories and more at mediasanctuary.org/stories.
To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or call 518-272-2390.
Sally Lauletta was a recent candidate for Rensselaer County Legislature. She spoke with Mark Dunley about the interaction with voters during the campaign, how to put her environmental concerns into practice by having friends produce small cloth bags to leave her literature in rather than plastic bags, and how she hopes things move forward to make things better for the future for everyone.
We're joined by Sally Laletta, who is a recent candidate for the Rensselaer County Legislature in District 2, which include North and East Greenbush and the town of Postenkill. Sally had previously been elected to her local school board, but, you know, sort of first time running for the county legislature. So we thought we'd ask Sally to come on and, you know, talk about her campaign and what the experience is like. Sally, you know, what did prompt you to run for county legislature this year?
And so what made me run? Well, a couple of things. The biggest piece was the environment. I think we're at a pivotal time to protect our environment. And it both local, state, and national leadership really has to make some very difficult decisions if we are going to change the course that we seem to be on right now with the environment. The climate change is real. The science is there, and it shows just how much change we need to stop our carbon footprint. And so that was one of my main reasons. The second one was open and honest government. I think that it's really important for people to be able to meet with their county legislators and other local officials and really talk about what is going on and what the people can do to make good change in the community. And there, obviously, there's a lot going on, and open and transparent government is the process for that to happen.
You mentioned the concern about the environment. Now, many candidates, when they, you know, are out trying to meet voters, will leave behind their various literature in a plastic bag to, you know, guess avoid the rain and stuff like that. But you decided to do something different. What was that?
I did. So there's a lot of campaign literature, and campaigning is not the most environmentally friendly thing to do because of just the sheer bulk of all the campaign literature. And many candidates chose to use plastic sleeves to insert the literature and leave it on the door. And I just decided, well, if I'm going to walk the walk, here's one way to do it. And that is to leave the literature or give the literature to people in cloth bags. And these cloth bags were made from remnants from other sewing projects. I have several friends who are wonderful seamstresses, and they know they have lots of material. So I asked several, especially one, to make these cloth bags to fit the literature. And I had over 1,600 bags made. And I was just so pleased with the support I got, not only from people here in town, but outside. They really thought that that's a great idea. That's, if you're going to talk about saving the environment, how to do that firsthand. And so I got all sorts of remnants from different patterns, and people really liked it. Voters responded positively to the cloth bags, and my fellow running mates in Ledge 2 helped me with that too. So it was a great experience to do that. And I think when it really helped with my messaging about protecting the environment. And so I'm very happy that I chose to do that.
Now, one of the things about running for office, you spend a lot of time going to doors and events and meeting a lot of people that you might not normally encounter during normal day-to-day visits. What was some of the, you know, the feedback and interest in, you know, things you heard by talking to so many people?
I encountered many friendly voters, and I know I expected to meet people who totally disagreed with my ideology, but many agreed with it. And again, with the cloth bags and my stance on the environment, I got a lot of positive feedback. And I also talked to people about, you know, healthcare and cost of living and, you know, meeting needs of seniors. And so in meeting all these people that, you know, I would not have campaigned, it gave me a broader perspective on what the daily concerns of citizens are, and how can we as a government meet those needs? What are our challenges, and what are our responsibilities, and how do we meet those challenges? So I from young people to, you know, people in the 30s, 40s, 80s, it was great to meet so many voters and get to know them and understand what is going on in their particular lives, and how government can help them impact in a positive way.
Now, America over the last decade has become a very, polarized country politically, especially if you listen to, the social media and the cable news. And a lot of fear out there on especially with COVID right now. Did people express, how they thought the country should try to heal themselves or ourselves?
I don't know if they're about healing, but definitely there was a conversation of how can we come together? What is dividing us, and what is it that draws us together? And there were several voters who, did not agree with many of the what's going on at the national level. And, they specifically spoke Joe Biden. And so for those circumstances, I really tried to, what are the commonalities? What is our overall goal here? We all want our lives to be, we want to live in a free society, obviously. But what is it that we want most in our daily lives? And those things that divide us, really, if you chunk it down, what can we do on a daily basis that helps us to get along? How do we tackle the most common problems, especially cost of living and protecting the environment? So I really try to look at what is important to people and how do we come together instead of trying to, my way is the right way and your right way is the wrong way. I try to de-escalate that kind of conversation instead of bring us together, and talking about, what their job is, what are their children doing, what's going on in the community, and bringing that conversation to the forefront versus, I think this is the right way. I found that to be helpful.
Now, one of the unusual things about, I guess, more post-election was that shortly after the election, the county executive, Steve McLaughlin, was indicted, arrested for campaign financial fraud. And there's also this burgeoning investigation by various criminal agencies into voter fraud, particularly absentee ballot voter fraud in the city of Rensselaer. In fact, at least one police chief is forced to suspend it because of allegations his involvement in the city of Rensselaer. So given both sort of this upheaval at the top, what ideas do you have as a citizen, moving forward, how to sort of raise the issues that you were concerned about within the context of county government in New York?
Obviously, honesty. And as far as moving forward, the ballot issue is huge. I mean, and the fact that so many ballots were handed in by operatives. And so as we move forward, we really need to figure out when there are questionable, they may not be illegal, but questionable parts with how the absentee ballots are handled. I do think at the county level with the Board of Elections, there has to be some soul searching going on, because what happened in this past election with the Working Families primary in June and then with the fall election, the general election, our Board of Elections here in Rensselaer County and other Board of Elections, they definitely need to scrutinize what is going on with the ballots and, how can we make it a fair and honest and transparent way of handling not just the absentee ballots, but early voting. The early voting situation in Troy, it shouldn't have had to come down from the Attorney General that Rensselaer had in a downtown Troy site. That was wasted money in my mind, because if they had just agreed to an early voting site,
we're out of time, unfortunately. We've been talking with Sally Laletta, former candidate for Rensselaer County Legislature, and this has been Mark Dunley, for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
We recently had a holiday special focusing on the aftermath of the recent election with three different perspectives from Democrats. So if you're interested in hearing more to process what happened in the election, you can hear that special by Corinne Carey at mediasanctuary.org/stories.
The Justice Center of Rensselaer County and Rensselaer County Women for Change held a press conference outside the county office building in Troy on December 24th, 2021. Hudson Mohawk Magazine Elizabeth Press was there. The segment starts with Democratic legislator and minority leader Pete Grimm.
The process that happened with these raises was that it came in the dark of night without any kind of process where the public or even the other legislators could have been involved in the conversation for. The increases themselves are outrageous, but the process alone is wrong. It is not a democratic process. I mean, and it is nothing new. I mean, earlier this year, the legislature had before it a resolution to vote to increase the amount of money that the county executive could give away, which just turned into a slush fund for his campaigning, which he used against other people that were campaigning, saying that the Democrats didn't support giving to fire departments and veterans when he was using the taxpayers' money to support his own campaign. I mean, the outrage here just goes on and on. But what's important here is we hope we can remedy this, but it's going to take the people of Rensselaer County to call their legislators and say they want justice. I mean, if we are to represent equity, equality, and justice for everyone, now is the time for people to speak up. Cindy?
Yes. We are very happy that so many people in the media are paying attention now. It took that $20,700 raise to draw attention to the fact that corruption has been going on in Rensselaer County for years, at least the last four. As Peter said, we need folks to come out January 5th. It's a Wednesday evening. There will be a public forum. I know that we plan to address this with a resolution. And we would like the support of the public behind us. It's the only way we're going to make a difference, because we will continue to stand up. We will speak out. And we would like you all to show up and help us with our job.
Now I'd like to introduce Bob Blackman, who is the president of the Justice Center for Rensselaer County.
Thank you very much. Mary Beth and I moved here 16 and a half years ago, and we were pretty naive, I guess. We were totally unaware of the political disaster that this county sort of represents. But perhaps it didn't 16 years ago. We have a racist board of elections that tried its very best to suppress the vote of people of color. Finally, a judge had to intervene and force the board to locate an early voting site in the heart of Troy. We have a county legislature that lacks the moral fiber to adopt a simple, non-binding resolution on the Black Lives Matter movement. They just couldn't do it. They couldn't bring themselves to do the right thing in spite of the work of a few good people like Cindy and Peter here. What they can do, however, is arrange themselves a big raise, an 18% raise. And even the chairman, who was the instigator of that, is under investigation, as well as the indictment of the county executive. I've got a couple of questions for you. How many of you in the audience are getting an 18% raise? No? How many are getting a 5% raise? How about a 2%?
No.
How about no raise at all?
Yeah.
How many of you are paying some of the highest taxes in the country?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And therefore supporting a corrupt regime? For sure, the shenanigans that go on in this building, and sometimes in City Hall, give us a bad reputation in New York State. So on the eve of Christmas Eve, and near the eve of of a new year. It's time that we start anew and revoke the county executive's pay raise.
Yeah.
Demand that he resign without a golden parachute.
Yeah. Yes.
And elect decent people to public office.
Yes.
We say enough is enough.
Thank you, Bob. Now I'd like to introduce Linda O'Malley, who is on the board of the Justice Center of Rensselaer County.
Yeah, I have other things I'd rather be doing today. You know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, here we are. Seems as long as we are otherwise occupied, some of our so-called representatives do whatever they damn well please. And it tends to make us a little bitter. I'm a little bitter. You know, Democrats are bitter. Republicans are bitter. Third party, no party. People are sick of this crap. And the thing is that I get worried about is maybe you don't even vote anymore because you think there's no point because this stuff is going to keep on happening no matter what we do. Well, please, please don't get to that position because we need you to stand with us. We need you to be able to say that there's a better way, that we deserve to be represented by people who are honorable. Honor is not passé. Honor right. is a necessary part of who we are yes. As a society, and we have to stand for it. And please, please don't give up, folks. Keep voting, keep standing with us. We need to stand up for something that stands for right and good. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Noreen, the county executive's office issued a statement last night that said the resolution passed by the legislature this week provides raises to some positions that have not been adjusted for years and are lower compared to counties with similar populations. Do you have a response to that reaction?
I think I'll let Peter Graham and Cindy, they know more about it than I do.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I think that to answer that question, it goes back to the process. You know, we have budget hearings that happen during the end of the summer, and that's when departments come to us and they give explanation for what they need in their budget, and this would be a perfect time for them to bring up this issue. I don't believe that this is the issue. You know, it would have happened in budget time. I think they just feel like they had a windfall of money, and why not spend it? And it's the taxpayers' money, and I think that's the outrage of all this.
The process was not followed. We've been told over and over again that we need to follow the process if we would like a minority attorney. We follow the process, and it's ignored. Because they are in the majority, and they have a supermajority, they can do what they want. And they've been doing what they've wanted for 4 years. That has to end.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working in also a regime where transparency is not there.
Indeed.
We ask for information, we do not receive it. Therefore, we find out many times about facts, as they call them, when you find out. And that is not right.
Well, I'm wondering if you have plans to undo what has been done. Mindful, of course, that if you were to pursue that route, many employees here in Rensselaer County would lose their pay raises.
You know, we have to go back to what this was all about. I mean, we are not against people being compensated for the work they do. But in the past year, in August, annual raises were given to all of the employees. We also had American Relief money that came in from stimulus, which all county employees got a bonus check. And then to get this raise on top of that would January 1st put people into getting a 5.20% raises after already having their raises. So certainly the residents of Rensselaer County would love to be getting a 5% or a 20% raise, but you can't do that. There's no financial responsibility in taking that action. This is not anything that we're, you know, denying raises or any kind of compensation for people that are working hard. This is outrageous. This is just giving away money, the taxpayers' money, without any kind of input from the people themselves.
The Rensselaer County Legislature Public Forum is on Wednesday, January 5th, 2022 at 6 p.m. And if any listeners are interested in speaking, the sign-up is between 5 and 6 p.m.
For those just tuning in, I'm Keelan McPherson.
And I'm Sina Bazilahiki. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOCLP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOSLP 98.9 FM Schenectady, WOOALP 106.9 FM Albany, WOOGLP 92.7 FM Troy, and WCAALP 107.3 FM Albany. This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, known today as the Stockbridge-Munsee community.
This program covers stories of social and environmental justice produced by the community, for the community, and is supported by independent donations. To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Thomas Kearney, founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization Capital Area Relief and Liberation, and Mikey Lanini, from Returning Brewery, spoke to Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Corinne Carey just before the 2021 holidays about their collaboration on two programs that aim to help people returning to the community from incarceration.
Thomas, welcome back to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. It's so nice to speak with you again.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Since we last talked, you've been very involved and very busy with activities of the Capital Area Relief and Liberation Organization. And I believe you call the organization CARL because the longer name is quite a mouthful. Can you tell me, what have you been up to? What are your priorities these days?
Right now, what we've been doing is attempting to fill the gap in legislative advocacy from restructuring of a lot of organizations that have happened after the last legislative session. Basically, what we're working on right now are two main things in one new one, which would be Parole Justice New York, the two bills, Fair and Timely Parole and Elder Parole, that are connected to RAP campaign.
The RAP campaign is releasing aging people from prison, right?
That's correct. There is also the Clean Slate Coalition, which is pushing for individuals who have been out for a certain period of time to have their records wiped clean from public record, not necessarily from all the way from private record like police agencies and judges, but so that it would make it more fair for individuals who have already served their time and attempting to move forward with their lives to find housing and employment, which are some of the biggest barriers to moving forward after a conviction. And the one new thing is the Communities Not Cages Coalition. We're doing some legislative advocacy for, which is hopefully there's a one bill that's very important called the Second Chance Look that would allow a judge to look back on someone who's got a very long and drawn out sentence and evaluate whether or not that sentence after a certain period of time can be changed or commuted instead of just leaving it in the governor's hands for clemency.
What's the status of that piece of legislation?
Communities Not Cages is still building the coalition. The bills are actually still being written. So we're there on the ground floor working with community members to see and personally impact individuals. The Center for Community Alternatives is really leading this fight with personally impacted individuals. And we're here just hoping to add some input and help any way we can with the connections that we've already made with the legislator in the Capital Region.
That's exciting. We'll certainly follow the progress of that important piece of legislation. I understand you have a new initiative. It's a partnership with a private venture. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. This is an initiative that we're very proud of. I'm so happy to have been connected with Mikey from Return Brewing in Hudson. What we're calling this is the Second Chance Initiative that comes with a pledge from organizations and businesses in hiring formerly incarcerated individuals. Return Brewing has gone really far in what they've committed to do before they've even opened their doors. What we're trying to do is get organizations and businesses to not just agree to hire like formerly incarcerated individuals, but to take steps to make that happen and to also support legislation that walks mass incarceration back from the full speed ahead track that it's been on for way too long.
That's really exciting. There's a big difference between employers saying, you know, I'm not going to discriminate against someone who's got a criminal record, and employers who are actively putting steps in place to recruit and retain those folks.
Yes, that's exactly what we're asking. We're asking individuals to be absolutely intentional about seeking these people out. There's actually a form attached to the pledge where employers can actually list themselves, list job openings that they may have now or some that are coming up in the future. And like I said, be intentional about the process of hiring marginalized individuals.
So Mikey, how did you get involved in this initiative?
Just co-founded this brewery. We just started a couple months ago. Thomas and I got connected through a friend of a friend, and I just started telling him about our goals as a company, and he took that and ran with it and created this really, really awesome opportunity.
Tell me a little bit about Return Brewing, and I'm very interested in the name because I wonder if you're thinking about the name had anything to do with people's return to the community after incarceration, or is that just a happy coincidence?
That's a great question. So to let you know who we are, we're a new brewing project, building out a tap room in Hudson, right in the downtown, and currently working with Crossroads Brewing in Catskill to release beers out to bars, restaurants, and grocery. I spent the last 9 years at Six Point Brewery in Brooklyn, but I grew up in Coxsackie. So I've seen the effects of gentrification and mass incarceration on the area. There's all these exciting things at work to make this a thriving, prosperous community. But to me, the question is, prosperous for whom? So we're well aware of the inherently gentrifying effects a craft brewery can have. So we're really trying from top to bottom to create a space for all members of the community. To talk to you about the name, it really is in some sense a happy coincidence, but what I love about this name and why we chose this name is because it means different things to different people. My favorite meaning, and there's a lot of them that we've come up with, my favorite meaning is sort of the transportative effect that taste and smell can give you and how it can return you to a moment. But really, we encourage people to let the name mean what speaks to them.
So here's a question that may seem misplaced in an interview about hiring formerly incarcerated individuals, but what's so special about your craft beer? There are so many breweries now. What sets you apart in terms of taste, smell, production?
That's a great question. We have a couple ways that we're going to be really grounded in a sense of place, right? So we just released a beer that was infused with juniper branches. So not juniper berries like gin, but the actual branches themselves. And the branch of the tree has a cedar aroma, and the needles have a lemon foresty scent to them. And we've already had people say, I was transported to the middle of the forest when I smelled that. So it's about seeking out flavors that you don't encounter in your everyday, because then you don't, you know, associate them with a specific moment. But if we can create new flavors that maybe you haven't had in beer before, but you recognize somewhere else, that really has that transportative effect.
Now, you've committed to hiring, what is it, a certain percentage of people who are formerly incarcerated? How is this going to work? How are you going to fulfill your pledge to this project?
We overall are just committed to creating this space for all members of the community. So that takes shape in a lot of ways. One is community programming. We want to host Pay What You Want events. We want to do community meals. We have our Second Chance Partnership Program, where we just cut a few checks to local organizations. I can speak a little bit more about that. And then there's, of course, working with Carl on the Second Chance Hiring Pledge. So specifics of the pledge right now are to 2 formerly incarcerated folks within the first 12 months. We push it out to as much as 12 months because we're not actually going to be hiring until probably April at the earliest. And you know how construction can work, and we want to make sure this aligned with our actual timelines. But I told Thomas, we're looking to hire a lot more than that. And it is about intentionality. And so I've been working with Reentry Columbia and Lori Scott over there, with Greater Hudson Promise and Adolfo, and talking to Kamal Johnson, the mayor of Hudson. For us, it's our intent. It's what we want to do. And then getting these organizations that know the right candidates and kind of connecting that all together so that they can help us find the right people if we have the will to make this happen.
As an employer, do you anticipate that you'll need to think about the kind of support mechanisms you'll have to have in place? Because the challenges facing people returning home from prison are pretty profound. It's not just a job, right?
1,000%. Of course, this is a learning process for me, and I don't want to pretend to be an expert here. I've never employed anyone before in my life, right? But I'm just engaging in the conversation. So I've spoken with the folks at Grayston Bakery, how they do it. They have an on-site social worker. That's definitely in our future goals, is having a social worker on site full time. We're thinking about different ways that transportation could make sense. Could we even link up a way that we could have folks safely transported, patrons safely transported to and from the brewery, while also transporting our workers? Because I know transportation is such an issue. I am connected with a number of social workers kind of in the wider circle of the Return Brewing team. And since we are so small, we have some friends who are going to kick off the program with some pro bono work. That's really, really exciting. But short answer, yes, absolutely. We understand that this means a lot of support.
Thomas, this is one of, I would imagine, a number of private businesses that you're speaking with about this Second Chance Initiative. Tell me your hopes and dreams for this program.
I really hope to expand as much as possible. We were doing this before we got into contact with Mikey in a more informal way. We have like a short list of small businesses that would say, hey, yeah, let's, like, if you have someone who just came home and they're on parole, send them my way and we'll see if we can get them some work. With this initiative, I mean, attempting to get organizations, not just in Hudson, Catskill, but also, yes, Albany, Schenectady, Troy, to look at this in a different way, to look at hiring individuals in a different way in order to keep our community safer and to ensure that jobs are getting to people that really, really need them when they're being offered. I mean, this could be a statewide initiative, and I don't see any reason why this initiative could not get that big with us working with the communities that we're trying to affect.
Making a pledge to hire people returning from prison, in some ways, it's not, I'm wondering if there's a way in which this is not just like a do-gooder initiative. I wonder if you can speak to this idea that employers stand to benefit from fulfilling this pledge. It's not just an employer saying, yes, I will do this charity for the community. Yeah. There's something to be gained here. Am I right about that?
You're definitely right about that. And you're right about that on so many different levels. But we have to have an honest conversation about recidivism and the causes for recidivism. I'm a formerly incarcerated individual. I'm 40 years old. The state got 17 of my 40 years on this planet. And I can speak to you about what it is to go on 10 job interviews in 1 week and be rejected by every single one of them. It's heartbreaking. It's demoralizing. And it pushes individuals where they don't want to go. It challenges an individual's sense of personal transformation that they may have gained while inside the system, in spite of the system, not because of how the system works. Now, when someone comes out and they ask for a job, they are asking to be a part of the community. They're looking to be a part of the community. They have the same responsibilities that every other community member has, except they have that one thing, that label that would prevent them from being a job. So what people who are employers have to realize is that it's not just about, I mean, a lot of people want to do this. And some people say, oh, yes, that's a great idea. But there's always that NIMBY attitude that we all learned in high school, that not in my backyard. Yes, I'm all for this, but I really don't think that this is the right fit for me. Employers have to realize that it starts with you. And it's not just a responsibility that you have to your organization. It's a responsibility that you have to the larger community. I mean, if we want crime to stop, the first thing that we have to do is give people opportunities who don't have them. If we want to make sure that our communities are taken care of, it starts with opportunity. It starts with investing in giving people opportunities who would not have them. Otherwise, what are we really doing except making the path perfectly ripe and paved for recidivism?
Are formerly incarcerated individuals good employees?
I think that, in my experience, the best employees.
Why is that?
There is so much more incentive to actually gain work and stay employed. First of all, because it's a part of a lot of individuals' conditions of parole. You must seek and find gainful employment. And if you don't, there's a very good chance that you'll be returned to prison. So an individual that you give an opportunity to, who's most likely could be returned to prison if they don't have that opportunity, is going to stick with that employer for a very long time. I can tell you because I've done it myself. The individuals who gave me shots, I did my best to never, ever let down.
There's an aspect of loyalty that an employer would gain.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can every employer make a pledge to hire formerly incarcerated individuals?
They could, but we're not just asking for the pledge. We're also asking them to, which anyone could just sign on to and say, yes, I'll do it and just forget about it. But what also holds people accountable is asking them to sign on as supporters of pieces of legislation that also would roll back mass incarceration on a certain level, like Clean Slate, like Communities Not Cages, like Parole Justice New York. We're not just asking people to put their names on a piece of paper so they can hold up and say, look what I did. We really want to see your support in a substantive way.
Mikey, can you tell me about how our listeners can learn more about Return Brewing and what you've got brewing, so to speak?
Absolutely. Returnbrewing.com. And really the best place to catch us though is on Instagram. That's where all of our updates, all of our new beers, everything comes out. I did want to speak to briefly this other program also called Second Chance. That kind of is how me and Thomas got rolling on the ideation together. We're looking for creative ways to use ingredients that might otherwise be discarded, turn them into beers, sell them, and then take that portion of the proceeds that we saved by reusing the ingredient, and then we're donating that or partnering with organizations that are doing this reentry work. So we just cut our first checks to Greater Hudson Promise After Incarceration, which is a New York City-based group, and Reentry Columbia over in Columbia County. It's very small. We're just getting the program started, but I think there's big potential here for ways that we can support each other. And me and Thomas have been talking about this. I think as the program goes forward, we'd love to have tangible things. So Thomas mentioned maybe a community fridge. Maybe we can, you know, take those proceeds and buy something like that, or it's prepaid cell phones for folks just getting out of prison. So really, really excited about that program as well.
What an incredible synergy between giving discarded produce a second chance and then turning that around and supporting second chances for people returning from prison.
Yeah, I'm so, so excited about the program. And if other breweries or cideries hear about this and want to get in on it, I think this could be a larger initiative as well.
Thomas, how can our listeners learn more about CARL, the Capital Area Relief and Liberation Project, and all of your initiatives?
At this moment, we don't have a website up, but we do have a Facebook page, which is Capital Area Relief and Liberation. That's the name of the page. There's also an Instagram under the same name, or they can contact me directly at carlnonprofit@gmail.com with any questions.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for speaking with me about all of your work and this exciting new collaboration. I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Corinne. And also, Thomas, thank you for thinking of us for this program and pledge and really just taking it and running with it and creating a really awesome program.
That was Corinne Carey speaking with Thomas Kearney and Mikey Lennon.
Giovanni Malinondo got involved with Manufacturing Housing Action when she was dealing with her community's own struggles of being barred out by predatory corporate owner. With the help of MH Action, Giovanni started her journey as an organizer. She spoke with Eileen Javier.
Hello, this is Eileen Javier for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I am here today with Yvonne Maldonado. I met Yvonne through the Saratoga Lakeview Mobile Home Park. She is an advocate, and she is trying to help the residents to continue living in their homes. How are you, Yvonne?
I'm good. Thank you, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Yvonne Maldonado, and I am with MH Action, New York Hudson Valley organizer. And MH Action actually stands for Manufactured Housing Action. And I've been with them since February of 2020.
And how you got involved with MH Action?
I actually became involved with MH Action back in 2019. I live in a manufactured community myself. I am a homeowner in a manufactured home in Silver Stream in New Windsor, New York, in Orange County. And we were bought out by a private investor corporation by the name of RHP Properties. They're the third largest private equity firm that owns manufactured homes across 28 states, are worth $6+ billion. And in New York, they have 17 communities. And they try to give us a increase on our rent over almost 5.5% back in 2019 for the leases in 2020. We all band together. We organized in the community to make noise about it because they did not give us any justification for the increase. And I met Liz Boyle, the MH Action Policy Director. Then she introduced me to Kevin Borden, the director, and they got involved with us in organizing us, how to lift our voices, how to tell our story, how important it is to share our stories, our experiences, and strategies, tactics on how we could fight against these corporate owners for an unlawful rent increase. Also getting involved, we organized and we got involved with our senator in District 39 where I live, Senator James Skoufis, and with his assistance as well, we did a press conference, we did a rally to the office, and the senator had called out to RHP. And they had to back off on that increase. And then I was blessed by the director of MH Action, Kevin Borden, and Liz Boyle. And they offered me a job to become a team member with MH Action as the New York Hudson Valley organizer. And it was a shock. I couldn't believe it at first. But here I am. And now I'm an organizer. So now I go in communities and organize residents, coach residents to become organizers and organize in their community to their residents to lift their voices, share their concerns, lift their stories, pressure elective officials for more protections, to hold corporate accountable. And right now I am working with about 17 to 18 communities across New York, like in Angela Kaufman in Saratoga with her community. And there's various other communities that I've been lifting, you know, the leadership team and the membership teams to, you know, really fight. You know, we need to fight. Housing is a crisis right now, not only in New York, but all over the world. And we need more protections to keep up the affordability of our homes.
What are some of the issues that families living in manufactured home communities are experiencing now?
They're experiencing bulliness from community managers. They're experiencing even tactics from owners, whether they're private owners or corporate owners, poor maintenance, septic issues that they do not respond to, gouging in rent, that they're raising the rents over the what the law has allowed, that law passed in 2019. I could explain a little more later on, over the 3%. And it's unlawful when you raise it over 3% and don't give a justification why the increase over the 3%. And it's so sad what I'm actually experiencing on ground, because I can identify with all of it as well, living in a manufactured community myself. So just lifting that power in members, you know, in the leaders, to really raise their voices by sharing their stories, not to be afraid. Retaliation is totally against the law. And I can understand why families are so afraid, because they get so intimidated by these owners or bully management in the community. So these are all things that I've experienced, and it's just getting worse and worse, and families being displaced out of their homes.
And is there any protection from these abusive community owners or investors, you know, that they're buying the manufactured home communities?
There isn't right now, although in Lakeview, where Angela lives, when they found out their community had been, the owner had been given an offer to be, for it to be bought, they were notified that the owner there, Mike Giovone, wanted to extend his RV boat storage. And Angela shared with me when I first met her how they organized and exercised the right of first refusal. And they found out about it, the owner and the new owner. And they found a loop way how to get around it. I personally went into Lakeview in September, I believe it was, and I visited Angela. We tried to do some canvassing in the community, and sadly to say, I had a run-in with the owner where he actually rolled up on us. Very unprofessional, very, for a person with money and wanting to be, being a businessman, he was very unprofessional, no kind of class, and just really intimidating Angela. And the community manager was following us, and I asked him to please get away and stop following us. But these are things I've encountered on ground. So it's really sad when you hear families also saying, oh my God, please don't let them know you have my contact information, because if they find out, they'll make my life miserable in here. And these are things that I've experienced on ground, and it breaks my heart.
There is any legislation to help these families to continue living in their affordable homes?
The 2021 legislation, which we're going to continue to fight for and really critically need it in manufactured homes to cushion us some protections, is the right of first refusal, which means if the corporate or the park owner sells, it wants to sell the community, they cannot put it on the market. They'd have to offer it to the community, to the homeowners in the community first, and let the, give them the time. I believe it's 140 days to organize and bring an offer to the table, get a nonprofit or a public entity to run the community for them, or make it a cooperative. There are resources out there that can help community families to buy their community. There's government money that's available out there. There's nonprofits, there's public entities, and even corporate cooperative ownership is another possibility. That's one of the protections that we're really fighting for that actually passed the Senate in 2021, was introduced by Senator James Skoufis from District 39. Great champ. He really fights for the affordability for families, especially now that it's so critical with the housing issues that we're all going through and we're all facing. Also, there's loophole fixes to the rent justification, which means that right now with the law in 219 that passed, it capped manufactured homes at 3%, but the owner can raise it up to 6%, but with justification. Justification, what is justification? It could be brand new roads, but I mean paving roads, not painted like they do in some communities. They paint it and then they want to say that's a justification. No, they got to really tear them out, really repave them and make them brand new. Expensing capital, a park in the community, any kind of expense on capital, property taxes, any of that sort. And even that right now, they're finding, these are corporate owners are finding loop ways to say, oh, that the property taxes went up. Meanwhile, they haven't. So those are the two. As an organizer, my thought is they have the power to pass more protections. In legislation in 2021, leaders fought for two bills, two protections that if it would have went into law last year, that like the right of first refusal, Angela's community, Lakeview, wouldn't be in the situation they would be in, because they would have had that first opportunity to organize and come to the table with a negotiation offer to buy their community.
What can we do to help pass this legislation? So how can we help the manufactured home community?
I'm an organizer across New York and the Hudson Valley. Any families in manufactured homes that you are experiencing abuses or any of the notes that I've mentioned, make phone calls to your elected officials, push them, let them know how you need these protections in manufactured communities, how you need explanations on why are they raising your rent, your lot rent over 3%. We are the homeowners. We rent the land that our homes sit on. And these owners and investors are just worrying about their pockets and not really worrying about families. Writing letters, really pushing for all of us to band together as a big coalition, a big power machine, to really pressure legislation for 2022 and get a big victory in 2022. As well, also, we do support and critically the good cause eviction. It's also critical to our housing security that our neighbors are housing secure. We support our renting brothers and sisters in their call for protection against unjust evictions. Like in buildings and in the city, they're fighting for good cause eviction because they are really being displaced for no reason at all. If they don't want to renew, if the rent corporate owners or the landlords don't want to renew their leases, they have the right to do that. Good cause eviction would protect a lot of families from keeping their roofs over their heads.
That is great information. How people can contact you, or how can they be in contact with MH Action?
MH Action has a webpage on Facebook, and it's mhaction.org. Also, you could reach out to me personally. My name is Yvonne Maldonado. You could always email me at ymaldonado@mhaction.org, or you could call my cell number 347-369-3785. My last cry and message to all families, especially in manufactured homes as well, we're very vulnerable. We need to band together and we need to fight together. We could make a change if we all band together in numbers. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with the Hawks on Mohawk Magazine. Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you, Eileen.
Eileen Javier will be bringing us regular interviews around housing justice. There are already some on our website. So tune back in or visit our website to hear more around that issue.
And that concludes our first show of the new year. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Kaylin McPherson.
And I'm Sina Bazilahicki, also the engineer. Our content is produced entirely by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute to local stories of social and environmental justice, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Thank you to all of our volunteers and sanctuary sustainers. If you value independent media, consider a gift of a monthly donation as a sanctuary sustainer by going to mediasanctuary.org. And we want to hear from you. So how do you experience Hudson Mohawk Magazine? And what resonates most with you? How could we do better? Let us know at hmm@mediasanctuary.org.
And tune in every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to hear local news or stream Sanctuary Radio at mediasanctuary.org. Hudson Mohawk Magazine is also available on demand as a podcast and on our Facebook page at Hudson Mohawk Magazine, or as an individual stories at mediasanctuary.org. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in. Stay safe and Happy New Year.